Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The number of cattle on feed on the 1st of August was just over 11.2 million head, which was about 1.4% higher than a year ago.
Breaking down the latest numbers from USDA's Cattle on Feed report, that's livestock analyst Shel Shagham.
During July, approximately 1.8 million head of cattle were placed in feedlots of 1,000 head or greater, which was about 1.8% above a year ago. The number of fed cattle marketed during July was just over 1.8 million head, which was about 4% below a year ago. But this does reflect one additional slaughter day in July of last year. So when we make the actual adjustment, we're about 1% above a year ago.
This is Agriculture Today.
One of the deepest droughts beginning to ease, that on the heels of some widespread moisture over the weekend. Rain began falling Saturday across the southern high plains. 48 hours later, most of the region had at least an inch of rain in the gauge, with some areas receiving more than 4 inches. That late season rain, though welcome, is too little too late to help an area dealing with historically high abandonment of spring planted crops like corn, cotton, and sorghum. And for the most part, farmers who've been irrigating have been able to shut off wells for the first time this season. But that drought has not been broken as of yet. In Texas, July was the driest month on record and the fifth warmest, according to climate records, dating back to 1896. Now, the ongoing drought across the Southwest is leading to a greater reduction in herd numbers. As the National Ag Statistics Service, USDA's NAS, reports that cattle and calves on feed as of August the 1st, 11.2 million head. That's 1% year-over-year increase. It's the highest August 1st inventory since the series began over 25 years ago in 1996. Now, placements totaled 1.77 million head. That's a 2% increase, while marketing's 1.83 million head slipped 4% compared to 2021. Texas remains the top fed cattle state in the country as inventories swelled to 2.85 million. That's a 5% increase, and producers placed 395,000 head in commercial feedlots during July, up 7% from a year ago. And though many within the cattle industry are familiar with the cattle fever tick, few can identify or know the treatment for the Asian longhorn tick. The species, new to the U.S., is an invasive and exotic pest that prefers tall grasses and wood, but is also highly mobile. Dr. Kathy Simmons, chief veterinarian with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, explains that the tick is smaller than a sesame seed and is asexual, meaning it doesn't require a male to reproduce. Now, the newly found tick has been spreading across the eastern U.S., 25 different hosts in 17 states, and it's known as a three-host tick. That means a different host for each stage of development. NCBA and USDA scheduling a two-day webinar this week to identify that tick, understand how it can affect the herd, and effectively manage the population. Finally, after spiking in March to historic levels, U.S. goods and services trade deficit fell 6.2% in June to $79.6 billion. That's down $5.3 billion from nearly $85 billion in May. Now, surplus in trade continues with South and Central America, nearly $8 billion, Netherlands at $3 billion, Singapore nearly $2 billion. But the deficits continue with China, nearly $37 billion, European Union deficit over $17 billion, and Vietnam $11 billion. Computers and petroleum products account for the largest share of growth in imports to the U.S., while exports of non-monetary gold and natural gas show signs of strength. So far, the deficit year-to-date, up 33.4%. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's never too early to start thinking about that, so I'm looking at two things.
Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Cotton Marketing Economist, Dr. John Robinson.
I look at the relationship between, let's call those new crop, 23 contracts. The relationship of new crop cotton to corn is a handy comparison, because historically the ratio of corn prices to cotton prices will predict the acreage that's planted. It'll predict whether we think acres next year will be higher or lower than they were this year. Right now, last time I crunched these numbers, December 23 corn was like 588 and December 23 cotton was 90 cents. And that ratio is about, corn divided by cotton is about 6.5, which historically would give us a drop in cotton acres if this ratio holds and is as influential as it historically is. We could have a drop from 12 point something million planted to 10. So I'm watching that to see if that holds all the way through the winter and those price relationships stay that way, because it suggests that we might have fewer cotton acres planted. The second thing is, NOAA is forecasting this La Nina, which is causing our dryness. They're forecasting the La Nina to stay in place all fall, which is bad news, because we want to have a dry harvest, but we need the ground to be replenished. Like at an 85% chance that this La Nina will continue through the fall, and then it's a 60% chance that it'll continue from December through February. So that's a pretty good forecast of a dry winter, which is bad. And so I'm looking at a situation where maybe we're going to plant less cotton because of relative prices, and then maybe it's going to be bad, you know, dry, a repeat of kind of situation we had this year. That suggests tight supplies, tight production, tight supplies, and a continuation of higher prices. You know, maybe we'll have prices that was 90 cents, low 90 cents, climbing up, you know, back up towards a dollar as the market kind of sizes up the possibility of just not having that much cotton harvested for next year.
To get to next year, we have to get through this year. It's been a big challenge, especially for those on the southern high plains.
There was a lot more available water in the Ogallala 11 years ago than there is now. So how much less could they fight that battle? Just trying to make up for it with irrigation. The High Plains is a deficit irrigation area. It has to get rainfall or it just doesn't work.
A lot's been written about the new Inflation Reduction Act's climate change programs, but there are also other features of that law.
In terms of lower health care costs for many, many Americans, senior citizens, a significant percentage of which live in rural America.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling reporters the other day that the new law may make financial life a little easier for seniors.
Because we're going to be able to cap the amount that seniors will pay for prescription drugs to no more than $2,000 a year.
Vilsack says that's a big deal. He told us he was at an event the other day talking to a woman who told him
that she was purchasing medication that she needed to keep her alive. The cost of the medication every 3 months was $9,000, and out of her pocket she had to pay about $2,500. So over the course of a year, she had to pay $10,000 just for one medication. This bill is basically going to provide savings to that individual.
And if it's insulin that's needed, the law caps the cost at no more than $35 for a month's supply. Gary Crawford, Washington.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Topeka, Eastern Kansas, they've had some rains. I've driven through there of late, and they're probably not as worried in terms of supplies.
Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien on recent cash bids.
You have an ethanol plant to the south of there in Garnett. You've got some other things going on. But still, they have a pretty good corn bid at 87 over at 707. When you look at forward bid for harvest, they're at least the highest bid I could find in that area is about 586. That's about a, 60 to 80 cents lower for a new crop forward contract bid than other areas of the state. So they're not apparently as worried about securing supplies in a forward manner as these other parts of the country are. Grain sorghum bids, you've got positive basis for Colby area, 25 over, even money in Salina, even in Garden, 7 over in Hutchinson, 50 over in Columbus. So grain sorghum bids aren't as strong as for corn, but they're still pretty strong in most areas. Again, the Topeka, they're about 18 under, so that's still historically a great bid, but not as much of a strenuous demand pull as in other parts of the state. I should mention soybeans, since we also paid quite a bit of attention to that. A lot of variation across the state. You do see the two western Kansas areas with wider soybean basis bids. We don't have as much soybeans out here, but Colby and Garden City at about a dollar under. But you start heading into Salina and especially Hutchinson and mostly in Columbus, you're getting from 10 under to 20 over. Columbus is 20 over for soybeans. So you've got some real issues happening there in that local market. You know, I'd stand back and look at the markets and the trends and try to see where our momentum is at this stage. In the materials we have on Ag Manager, we have some weekly continuous futures charts that we're watching. And on a scale of zero being very, very weak in bearish markets to 100 being outstandingly bullish and strong markets, 50% being right in the middle, just neutral, going sideways. Corn futures right now, and on that type of scale, they have a rating of about 43, so they're neutral. Chicago wheat has a rating on that of about 38, a little bit weaker than corn, 38, 39. Soybeans coming in at about 43, so soybeans, corn at about the same. So we're just in a mode coming off the highs we had, well, about a month ago, to where we're just sort of sideways to going lower. I think going forward, we will have new sets of USDA numbers to have to wrestle with. We still have a major unanswered question with the dryness now that's emerging in Iowa, Minnesota, and the Dakotas, with the U.S. drought monitor showing dry soils, a lot of drawdown in soil profile moisture, and the need to keep bringing timely rains every week to overcome what we don't have in the rest of soil profile, but yet we can't still survive through if we keep getting just nursed along in terms of rainfall. So you've got areas that are on the precipice of really seeing declines in their yields. We already know that's happening in the central and southern plains, but it sure bears watching in terms of what's happening up in, as we said, Iowa, southern Minnesota, and the Dakotas. They have the potential, if they don't get bailed out by timely rains, to really start to see some yield declines.
And could this be providing some stability for markets?
That stability would come from sure knowledge. Yes, the amount of uncertainty we'd hope would go away.
Yes.
And we'd be able to plan more readily. But right now we've had those August numbers, a lot of uncertainty around them, as you and I have just been talking about. And I think we'll have a clearer picture where we really are coming in at once we get to September and then October and November. But at this time, we're just trying to figure how this situation is going to work out for the rest of the summer.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Over the years, there's been some talk of splitting farm programs and nutrition programs in the Farm Bill to separate bills. However, Utah Farm Bureau member Tyson Roberts says the two programs need to be connected. Roberts is a produce grower that sells direct to consumers.
I am the sixth generation on our family farm. Over the years, we've done a lot of different things, cattle and a lot of grain crops. Got more into vegetables as I was growing up. We switched more to vegetables than specifically direct marketed vegetables. So now about 85% of our crops go directly to consumers at farmers markets.
Customers at the farmers markets can use their SNAP benefits funded by the Farm Bill to purchase fresh local food.
It's been beneficial to have that option available to those in our community that are most in need, giving them the opportunity to buy the freshest, high quality produce and use their SNAP benefits to receive that. And it helps us boost our sales as well, opening up to more customers.
Roberts says farm programs and the nutrition program go hand in hand.
It's tough to get a farm bill passed that has all of the things the farmers need without the nutrition aspect of it, because you have lawmakers on both sides of the aisle representing a lot of different demographics, and those urban legislators need to see something in the farm bill that's benefiting their constituents.
Michael Clements, Washington.
Well, we move from talking about the farm bill to what's actually in the field right now. We're talking about the 2022 crop. Dr. John Robinson, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension cotton economist.
The Southern High Plains, the entire state of Texas, it's raining on my end of the state too, which actually it's unwelcome from where I am and further south. They're into harvest now, and so they need hot, dry conditions, which they're not getting for the last week or so, and it may continue. This is all coming off the Gulf, but yeah, weather has been the story, the absence of rain, the drought, which, you know, we can talk about how bad it's been by various measures. Everything's compared to the terrible drought of 2011. This is certainly a terrible drought. The impact to agriculture and to cotton, of course, is, you know, all relates to when those drought impacts came on. And, you know, this drought was just devastating in its timing for, you know, the pre-plant period of where we'd hope to accumulate some moisture and then planting and then the crop development. It's had a devastating impact, which I can reflect that just in the revision that USDA did to their crop size, their national cotton crop. They had a forecast previously, and based on averages of what was planted and average conditions and accounting a little bit for how dry it was, they had an estimate previously of 15 million bales. They cut it to 12 something. They cut 3 million bales. Most of that is coming from Texas and Oklahoma. So that's sort of the statement of how bad things are. And most of that is drought loss. So it's just one of those years, one of those terrible years.
Dr. John Robinson, cotton economist in College Station. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The coastal bend was drought impacted early.
Dr. John Robinson is a Texas A&M AgriLife Extension cotton economist on this year's crop.
So there's an area, I'm told, there's this gap. If you go down the coast, there's production in the upper coast, and then there's this gap where a whole bunch of ground was just zeroed out early. It didn't germinate. And then further down, closer you get to the Rio Grande Valley, things were actually pretty good. And I'd heard that, you know, some of the harvest that had begun to come out of the valley was pretty good. Now they've been rained on for 2 weeks from the valley all the way up the coast. That's never good. That's not good from a cotton grading standpoint. So we may, they're getting messed with. But back to USDA's, kind of reassessment of things. And another comparison I could make for you is, after 2011 being the drought of record up till that time, the abandonment rate, that's the difference between what's planted and what's actually harvested, the fraction that's not planted. The abandonment rate in 2011 was the worst we'd ever seen up till that point. It was 36%. So over a third of what was planted failed, was not harvested. This last report, USDA's forecasted abandonment, they previously had it at like 31.5. They bumped it up to 43, which is just astounding. And it really took the market, took me by surprise, took the whole market by surprise, because, you know, to come out and say, hey, we're cutting 3 million bales off of the production number and we're raising abandonment 43% to explain it. They did that in August, which, you know, relatively speaking, is kind of early. There's still more time for, you know, crop finishing up, and there's going to be a lot more data collected in the subsequent monthly supply and demand reports. You know, they'll be going out in September, particularly over the whole state of Texas. They go out and do what they call objective field sampling, or they're counting bulls is what they're doing. They'll do that in September and again in October and again in November off the same stretches of row in the same fields. So we'll be getting that. We'll be getting Jennings data. We'll have a much clearer picture with a lot more data. And for them to come out in August and say and make this huge, huge adjustment downward, it's it leads me to think of two things. Maybe they just said, well, this is what we think it is, and we'll just jump right to it, which was pretty bold. Or, and this is a scarier thought, maybe they're being cautious and incremental and just saying, okay, well, you know, up to this point, we're comfortable saying there's 43% abandonment, you know, in the back of their mind thinking, man, maybe it'll be worse, but we'll sort of, we'll inch our way towards that, that estimate. Either way, it's just, it's astounding to me that they made the adjustments that they made as relatively early as it is in the, I'll call it the analyst season, the yield guessing and production guessing season. We got a lot of time to go, and if it goes lower from here, anyway, the market reacted to that by shooting up. We were limit up the day that report came out. We were limit up the following Monday. We were up 3.5 cents the following Tuesday. And that's what's kind of given us a bit of a rebound on expectations of even a shorter market a shorter supply than we thought.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The August report is really special because it's the first look you have at intended yields and possibly production numbers for the crop year.
Caitlin McCulloch, Director, Livestock Marketing Information Center.
It is mostly satellite data and farmer survey, so it's not actually utilizing objective yields, but it's still that first initial look that we get at the corn crop, the soybean crop, and the hay production crop, which are the things I care about as a livestock economist. So we'll start with corn. Corn yields were eased a little bit lower, 175.4 versus the 177 that was initially listed from on trend. Price projection there was largely left the same. They're expecting a 665 season average price. We're actually a little bit higher than that. So I would expect that maybe to push up a little bit because I think those yields might deteriorate a little bit further. Soybean yield looked good, 51.9 bushels per acre, about half a bushel higher than the initial estimate. Acres were reduced by about 300,000, and your estimated demand production number was about 2% higher than last year. Still very strong prices, though, in the soybean complex. They're looking at a season average price of $14.35, which is very strong. The real shock, though, for hay producers, or maybe not a shock because they've been enduring these high hay prices for so long, was that hay production seems to be reducing even further. So the August crop production report estimated that the U.S. nationally is facing about a 4.6% drop in other hay, so that's non-alfalfa varieties. Texas expected to see a 29% drop in production, Oklahoma down 15%, Missouri 16% down, Kentucky down 18%, Arkansas down 23%, Georgia down 25%. I mean, these are big double-digit declines. Specifically related to Texas, though, Texas is the number one other hay-producing state in the country. So to see that drop 29%, talking about a large volume of loss, it's probably going to have a ripple effect towards other states. On the alfalfa side, a little less of a game changer, only expected to dip about 145,000 tons, which is less than 0.5% from last year. But some states also showing some pretty big double-digit losses, and the ones I key in on are Colorado down 36% from a year ago and Nebraska down 35%. Now, we've had high to record high prices almost for 2 years now, where the last agricultural prices nationally put hay prices in July was alfalfa was listed at $245, I believe, per ton. So if you think about the last annual record high was $211. In the 2000, I think, you know, 11, 12, 13 type time period, we're going to blow that out of the water. We're probably going to see record high alfalfa prices and probably much, much higher than that on a season average price. On other hay, we're sitting at 146 in June. Sorry, these are June. So we're going to get July here at the end of August. But these are, again, national hay prices. That's probably a little bit under where the previous record high is, but we expect that price to remain in that 150 type of range for most of the year. Last year, we averaged about a 145, so we're hanging in there right now, but I would expect that price to move higher nationally, especially with these kind of production numbers being put out early. And one caveat I would add is that this August data can change, so we'll get objective yields in October, and they'll keep revising it, and then the final kind of revision for the year will be in January, and then, of course, there's the five-year census revisions that will come out in the next ag census.
On longer-term hay concerns.
It's been tight for most of the western U.S. for 2 years now, and this is going to set us up for an even worse situation from that perspective. And especially when you think about how pasture and range conditions have deteriorated, the carrying capacity is not there. You need to supplemental feed in a lot of the country. And so it is a very big concern, not just for buying hay right now, but what do you have on hand over the winter? What is available for you to buy on hand over the winter? It's a little bit of a perfect storm. We've been saying that now for consecutive years, and the hay situation doesn't appear like it's going to get any better, at least in the near term.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We can and should do more for beginning young and small farmers.
Austin Scott, a Republican from Georgia, member of the House Ag Committee.
I hope that we push down that in that path in a bipartisan manner. It's going to require a lot of work. And the fact of the matter is, you're not going to start out as a beginning farmer or a small farmer growing what it takes to feed America. And so we have to do what we're going to do for beginning young and small farmers in conjunction with making sure that we take care of production agriculture and those who are currently producing that 90% of the food supply. So again, 12% of the farmers produce 90% of the food supply for this country. And we need to make sure that that they have the crop insurance and the other risk mitigation tools that they need so that in those bad years they can farm through the good years.